Welcome to A Course in Miracles. All right, so with all spiritual programs and ideas, you are find yourself in one condition and you have an idea that there is another condition that you would be happier in. Otherwise, you would stay in the condition you find yourself and try to draw others to you. Spiritual program is because the material program is too limited. A spiritual path exists because somehow, some way, somewhere in you, the material path has lost its luster. Although it may be fun and interesting, there's something about just being a body that's not delivering for you the promise of the happiness that you really want.
Is that ever a true statement?
Isn't it true?
Oh my God, yes.
So, and especially the more experienced you are in trying to make the body, the world, money, education, good food, fast cars, trying to make it work, the more you try to make it work, the more you have learned its limits. If you're very young and you haven't tried to make the world work, you're not in this room. You're out there putting hair gel, getting a better multiplayer game, better thing on Facebook so that you can connect like you should. How embarrassing, you don't have more than so many followers. That's making the world, try to make the world deliver. And there's lots of ways, of course, right? Healthier, wealthier, wiser, more popular. Did you write a great book? Did you see a great play? Did you live in a great city? Do you have better friends? You could have better friends, after all, or marry another great woman. Have you tried that?
Another
regular
me.
I know how good you are at that. You're like our pro. Man, you are like the professional. It's really... But he knows something that I don't know. I mean, you really do. He really knows something that I don't. Okay? So that's the material promises. There's tons of them. We're all here because there's an inkling, if not a strong conviction, that there is another way. And if you spend time with this book, it probably lighted it up. The other way sparked. Like it did for me, sparked my heart and my mind at the same time about something beyond the body. It happened. Can't turn back now. Don't want to. How much further can I go? But in that contrast, there remains the body and how well I know it. Believe me. When a certain dark chocolate bark product arrives at Costco, I buy 2 bags. Just in case they take it off the shelf. Takes me a whole year to eat them. It's okay. That's the one I want for this body. Tastes great. It's crunchy. Oh, yeah. Even says chia seeds and stuff on it. It's like it's healthy. Like it's healthy. I know. I'm into that. I'm into a body. But it is not my primary. Not my primary focus. It does not have, there's no promise for my body anymore that will bring me to as high as the promise for my spirit that I now know. The light in me that I have touched from this, doing this work, and others, and other works, spiritual path. But there remains this body, right? So we are moving now into a subsection. Our main section is called The Obstacles to Peace. Now this next one is about the body. You see, among other things you could talk about as the body is, one thing you might describe it as, and let's do it for the next few moments for our meditation, is as your home. We think of the body as our home. Pam, where are you?
Home.
Well, you're right there.
I'm right here.
And wherever you go, there you are. And if you look in the mirror, there's your home. It's just something we need to think about as we work on contrasting the material with the spiritual. And then we will be guided through that. So let's take a few minutes and just think about this concept. Where are you right now? Where do you find yourself right now? Are you at home in your body? Are you at home in your mind? How much associated are you with what's in the mirror? Quick, where are you right now? What do you use your body for? Are there times when you work for your body? When it seems to be in charge? Quick, where are you now? When your body gets hurt, what's hurt? Are you hurt? What will help the body get better? Will you participate? Will you go along with what's needed when your body gets hurt? Do you show up for it? When your body gets hungry? When your body gets tired? When your body gets comfortable? When somebody hugs your body? Where are you? What are you doing with all that? Is your body your home? And now, if you will, just for kicks, why don't you just pick one thing? You use your body for something you could do that you'd like to do without, something you couldn't do without your body. Just pick something to share with us if you like. Something you would need your body's capacities to do. One of our jobs here is to bust the ego and all the things that it does, all the things it promises to do. Thanks, new guy. And a lot of spiritual programs just bypass the body and go into the mind and work with beyond the body. And then when you get done with the great, and they're great. I've been through years of this stuff. Sat with Zen guy for years. And you come out of that, and then you go back to working with your body right away. It's really good if you can carry with you the spiritual message and somehow integrate it, but you're pretty much on your own as you go out the door. You get off the cushion. Your butt gets cold as soon as that happens. Back in the world. Course in Miracles works right through your body, right through your fixation, right with the addiction that you have to have you let go of the addiction. It doesn't come outside in. It's inside out. How fast can we get inside? I think it's brilliant. The way this actually works with us right where we are, busts you, working your ego, catches the spiritual ego trying to make the world better. So let's talk about this body a little bit. What is just one thing that you do you need your body to do?
Drive my car.
Drive your car. So you can move around at speed faster than you can walk. Taking your perceptions and everything you got and relocating it with the car in the world. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Pam, what is something you do with your body? You need your body for
swimming.
You see how?
Playing music, yeah.
I know. Believe me, I'm thinking of your music. Your music too, man. What happens with that? But swimming, I feel the sensation slipping through the water.
Best thing ever.
Wow, it's like you're a different animal when you swim. It's amazing. Yeah. Well, what is something you do? You need your body for?
Well. Since I don't have a car, I have to propel myself.
Yeah.
But the first thing I thought of was that I use my body to attract other bodies.
Other bodies.
Yeah. I mean, that's its primary function.
If you look like a cactus, you wouldn't be hanging with other bodies and minds that are in bodies. Primary function, communication. Mm-hmm. Attracting other bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Luis.
Walking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like to walk.
Yeah, it works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's built for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like natural. In walking, everything's working. Swinging the arms a bit, you know, it all comes together. It's just a wonderful freedom, walking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kim, something you need your body for?
I was thinking along the same lines as Walt. I was thinking that I just assume not be this body.
Yeah.
And just be spirit, but I couldn't see Pam if she was spirit. I have to see her body in order to be able to communicate with her. So on a spiritual level, I have to be able to see who I'm trying to connect with.
Yeah.
Because we are bodies.
It's what we know.
Yeah.
And when we say Pam, the first thing that comes to mind looks like that.
Yes.
Voila! And when we think about how much we love Pam, looks like that. We could name the pillow Pam.
Aww.
Right, but it's not going to have the same effect.
Right.
We actually connect with Pam, turns out, in this world. Speaking her language, seeing her form, our body to her body. How natural is that? It's natural as walking. You need a body to attract other bodies. Yeah. Yeah. Stephen.
Eating.
Yes!
Cannot believe I didn't think of that.
There's so many.
Well, I mean, there's sex, you know, but I mean... You know,
yeah, but eating during sex, I mean, hey.
Well,
how about that?
Looking for another partner right now.
Two different kinds of distraction.
Yeah.
Well, so, just like I can't have cake with dinner, you know? I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Just have cake for dinner.
Yeah,
yeah,
there you go.
Well, I always have a separate meal anyway, obviously. So,
yeah.
Eating.
Oh my God, it's wonderful.
The whole distraction, the pleasure.
Eating is natural, true, like walking, right? Eating is natural. Your body kind of needs it at some level. You have to eat something. You may as well make it taste good. If you're into that, if you're into good food, it's good living. Those few moments, yeah. Mm-hmm. Natural, rewarding, purpose. Eating is tinged with purpose, so it's got this richness to it because you have to do it to survive. You're no matter whether it's an addiction eating or it's sustenance eating, it has a little bit of purpose going on there. So it's got some real you're permitted, it's validating that you're taking care, you're loving yourself when you're eating to some extent.
The double-edged sword. There's that.
Isn't there?
There's distraction.
For sure.
And then there's the drug.
Yes.
Oh, did you have to bring that in?
Oh, sorry.
I was thinking chocolate cake. I was thinking the best lobster I ever had. And then there's the distraction. I know people who not only walk, but run on a constant basis. And I think it's as much a distraction as it is anything else. They go for the drug, the runner's high, and the occupation and the sense of purpose to do this big running thing. It's their thing. It's really healthy. We should all run, for sure. But I'm a little concerned about this person. Escaping. Yeah.
Well, it has to become an obsession or you can't do it.
That could do it really right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Double-edged sword. Oh, yes. Double-edged sword, my friend, with everything we're going to talk about tonight. Alana.
When you first started talking, I'm going to be a little longer than you feel. When you first started talking, I thought, you know, I don't have any use for my body. Quite often feels like an inconvenience.
Mm.
And I look in the mirror, and what I see is a perfectly healthy body
mm-hmm.
that I wish I didn't have to eat. I wish I didn't have to sleep. I wish I didn't have to do anything for that body.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you came around to say, name one thing, it was exactly what Kim and Walt were saying. To communicate,
uh-huh.
and but then you waited too long.
Yeah.
Because I came up with this idea. I originally said communicate with those I love, just a lot of people. But the thing that came up with me is when you waited too long was I don't need to talk to them to communicate with them
mm-hmm.
because. Often when I think of my daughter, within seconds or two, and I mean seconds, she's on the phone with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking, I mean, it just, I don't need to have that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm in communication with her, with my granddaughter, with my family, with some people that are not my family, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think to myself, you know, what is the thing that I would miss about my body? And I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's that immediate what you do with it.
There's a lot of what I do with it. I feed it. Part of the reason I wish I didn't have to have a body was because I feel like a servant to it.
Ah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like it keeps me tied to
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And yet you continue to serve it.
Yeah, I do. Maybe I feel obligated to it for getting me as far as I've gotten. I don't know.
And dare I say, you feel the most comfortable with it, continuing to work.
You know, that's true, because one time I had an out-of-body experience.
Mm.
I was doing Tai Chi, and I used to count or think about what the next move I was going to make.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was about 7 or 8 steps into it, and I said, well, what happened if I didn't do any of those things?
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I knew, I was as far away from it as from here to the wall. And it continued doing Tai Chi without me.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, how in the world is it doing that when I'm not there?
Mm-hmm.
But then, back to what you just got through saying, I said, I wonder how I'm going to get back in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back at it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, I don't know if the body needs me any more than I really need the body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. It's a comfortable place to say the least. It's the default right now.
Yeah.
For communicating, for walking, for moving. Whew. It's got this sense of pleasure with it. It's got a sense of belonging. It's got...
But when you first started, you said, pretty soon you get to a point where you really don't feel all that comfortable with your body.
Right.
And boy, did that resonate with me. I don't.
Yes.
It's not because I don't think it's a decent body. I think it's a great body.
Uh-huh.
It's just that I don't appreciate it as much as maybe I ought to.
There gets to be a point where you're some part of your mind goes beyond the body. Once you do that, even for a second, even if it's with drugs or something, there is no coming fully back into the body.
And you know, that's a little scary.
Really? Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm everywhere. I can be any place in the freaking universe at any time. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to, like, what you're talking about, I can do these experiments. I'll put energy into, like, Susan, and this capsule her a lot. She'll go, well, I swear you're there. You were at my place from 7 at, after 7 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, yeah, I was thinking about that. Or you'll mm-hmm. when before they call, you've got the thought of them. Or you can sit there and, like, and put a bunch of energy out. Mm-hmm. To her, right before I call, and then call, and she goes, "I was just thinking about you." It just, mm-hmm. and the only reason it really stops us from going further into that,
yes,
we have secrets that we don't want to share. So we could open our mind up and let everybody go right into our mind. It would be,
yep,
and it's not that difficult. You just put in, you can make it happen.
Yes,
you should do experiments in certain classes, and it was really easy.
What makes you think, given that you can send energy out her, that she doesn't know your secrets on some level?
Well, people do quite a bit, but see, we don't want to, we're afraid of all that.
Yeah, it's not her not knowing secrets, it's his. Yeah. It's him keeping his own secrets.
All of us have some secret. Down. We have some guilt, and you have to get rid of all that guilt.
It has nothing to do with her.
So. Yeah.
Okay. Everybody
it
turn.
Isn't that you don't think she knows them, it's just that there's something about
people. Well, you know how you just know stuff about people, but you can't quite put your finger on it. You know more about people than you think.
Absolutely.
No, it's. This thing is so close.
Can I say, you just said a word that I've studied and researched, guilt.
Yeah.
Guilt can be
fixed. Boy, you come to the right group.
Okay.
Guilt can be stuff that it is all dogmatic and lies and based on somebody else's belief systems. And do you know how many belief systems are on this world? Oh my goodness. There's all kinds.
All right, you got to spill the beans.
What's this? I have to share something with you guys.
Tell us about guilt.
I have to share something with you guys. 2 years ago, I shared this with my good friends, my close group. Two years ago, I read something in the newspaper. It was in the San Francisco Chronicle about, I don't know, Idaho, somewhere in the Midwest, where they made a law. Now, it was a law. They wrote it into law that grown-ass men can't marry 14-year-old girls. And I read that, and I went, wait a second. Are you kidding me? This was 2 years ago. Now, there was a belief system in the Midwest that it was okay for you to go marry, as long as the parents said it's okay, you can go marry that 14 or 15-year-old girl. To me, that's like, oh my gosh. They just passed a law 2 years ago that's illegal, that you can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, talk about belief systems and guilt. Guilt can be all kinds of guilt.
Maybe you didn't need to spend the last 6 months with us.
But I just wanted to share, you just brought that up, and I've done that for myself.
Yeah.
Being raised very religious as a child, I had, can you imagine how much I had to go through to go, well, that's a bunch of hogwash. Now I don't have to feel guilty just for being.
Uh-huh.
I could just sit and enjoy being. Without feeling like I've got to be doing something, cleaning something, fixing something, doing something for somebody. Yeah. I can just be.
It's interesting you bring that up, because one of the hard to understand things about this book, you're already, is a vein in you, and that is the core of the separation and the bottom of it all. When you get past all of the struggling and trying, was it the bottom of it all is guilt? Mm-hmm. What enables this world to continue to do what it does is guilt. What enables you to continue to have to be a good father, be a good brother, be a good employee, that you take care of yourself, keep that body going. What empowers all of the differences is guilt. What empowers the need to join? Guilt. Here. So it's one of the core things of the book that you get around to. We spent the last 2.5 months
on. Well, I just want to one more thing. Guilt and ego is what I've been working on myself for the past 5 years.
Welcome to Course in Miracles.
Things right there.
It's what's the blind horse to be at.
I don't know what you say, but I think you get right.
Everybody turn to page 339 in the workbook. in the workbook, 339, lesson 182. Let's just take a gander at one of the places in the book where it kind of points out the other way, that despite all the work that you do with this world and the course does with helping you understand the world, then there's things like this. David, you ready?
Sure. This world you see.
And then the title of this lesson is, yeah. I will be still an instant and go home. Go ahead.
This world you seem to live in is not home to you. And somewhere in your mind, you know, that this is true. A memory of home keeps haunting you, as if there were a place that called you to return. Although you do not recognize the voice, nor what it is the voice reminds you of, yet still you feel an alien here from somewhere all unknown, nothing so definite that you could say with certainty you are an exile here. Just a persistent feeling, sometimes not more than a tiny throb, at other times hardly remembered, actively dismissed, but surely to return to mind again.
This is because of what Luann said, and it fits right in with what we have to study tonight. Pam?
No one but knows whereof we speak. Yet some try to put their suffering in game. Yet some try to put by their suffering in games they play to occupy their time and keep their sadness from them. Others will deny that they are sad and do not recognize their tears at all. Others still will maintain that what we speak of is illusion, not to be considered more than but a dream. Yet who, in simple honesty, without defensiveness and self-deception, would deny he understands the words we speak?
Well,
we speak today for everyone who walks this world, for he is not at home. He goes uncertainly about an endless search, seeking in darkness what he cannot find, not recognizing what it is he seeks. 1,000 homes he makes, yet none yet none contents him his restless mind. He does not understand he builds in vain. The home he seeks cannot be made by him. There is no substitute for heaven. All he ever made was hell.
Perhaps you think it is your childhood home that you would find again. The childhood of your body and its place of shelter are a memory now so distorted that you merely hold a picture of the past that never happened. Yet there is a child in you who seeks his father's house and knows that he is alien here. This childhood is eternal, with an innocence that will endure forever. Where this child shall go is holy ground. It is his holiness that lights up heaven and that brings to earth the pure reflection of the light above, wherein are earth and heaven joined as one.
It is this child in you your father knows as his own son. It is this child who knows his father. He desires to go home so deeply, so unceasingly, his voice cries unto you to let him rest a while. He does not ask for more than just a few instants of respite, just an interval in which he can return to breath again, breathe again, the holy air that fills his father's house. You are his home as well. He will return, but give him just a little time to be himself. But then the peace that is his home, resting in silence and in peace and love.
This child needs your protection. He is far from home. He is so little that he seems so easily shut out. His tiny voice so readily obscured. His call for help almost unheard amid the grating sounds and harsh and rasping noises of the world. Yet does he know that in you still abides his sure protection. You will fail him not. He will go home, and you along with him.
This child is your defenselessness, your strength. He trusts in you. He came because he knew you would not fail. He whispers of his home unceasingly to you, for he would bring you back with him, that he himself might stay and not return again where he does not belong and where he lives an outcast in a world of alien thoughts. His patience has no limits. He will wait until you hear his gentle voice within you, calling you to let him go in peace along with you to where he is at home and you with him.
When you are still an instant, when the world recedes from you, when valueless ideas cease to have value in your restless mind, then when you hear his voice. So poignant, he calls to you that you will not resist him longer. In that instant, he will pick you to his home, and you will stay with him in perfect stillness, silent and at peace, beyond all words, untouched by fear and doubt, sublimely certain that you are at home.
Rest with him frequently today, for he was willing to become a little child that you might learn of him how strong is he who comes to rule. For he was willing to become a little child that you might learn of him how strong is he who comes without defenses, offering only love's messages to those who think he is their enemy.
So we're not going to discuss this in depth, so I just want to stop you there, especially you caught it. When, same as in the Bible, what does it mean to become a little child?
Innocent, to forget what you know.
What?
It's like a clearing, like trying to forget what you know, what you think you know.
Yeah, because a child doesn't know.
Yeah.
And key, different from an adult, child actually knows they don't know. So the mind's open to learn. So unless you be as a little child, just means unless you're willing to change your mind about...
Yeah. Be a little child and check it out.
Check it out.
See if it works.
See, try something different. Yeah. Learn. Be open. And so in this beautiful sentence, in this section here, this Holy Spirit has become like a little child in not judging you. Coming down and being able to look at things that you hold dear, things that you think are really valuable, like all the things you need your body for and you do with your body. And the Holy Spirit says, okay, I'll look through your eyes. Holy Spirit in this book is not something, some apparition or something. It's actually part of your mind that's connected to the truth still. So the Holy Spirit is here to look through your eyes and see exactly what you see, but not believe that it's true. And come only with love for it. And if you turn your mind over to the Holy Spirit, then you can see through the Holy Spirit's mind, through your eyes. But that's what it means to come a little child with you. Right? Come into whatever trip or fear or drama is in your life and translate it back to love. But it would have to come down, right, to your level somehow, so that you knew that it was your mind, not some great promise guru somewhere else. No. That's the little child we're talking about. Please continue.
He holds the might of heaven in his hand and calls them friend, and gives him strength to them, that they may see he would be friend to them. He asks that they protect him, for his home is far away, and he will not return to it alone.
Christ is reborn, yes, but a little child, each time a wanderer would leave his house, his home. For he must learn that what he would protect is but this child who comes defenseless and who is protected by defenselessness. Go home with him from time to time today. You are as much an alien here as he.
Take time today to lay aside your shield, which profits nothing, and lay down the spear and sword you raised against an enemy without existence. Christ has called you friend and brother. He has even come to ask your help in letting him go home today, completed and completely. He has come as does a little child who must beseech his father for protection and for love. He rules the universe, and yet he asks unceasingly that you return with him and take illusions as your goals, as your gods no more.
You have not lost your innocence. It is for this you yearn. This is your heart's desire. This is the voice you hear, and this the call which cannot be denied. The Holy Child remains with you. His home is yours. Today he gives you his defenselessness, and you accept it in exchange for all the toys of battle you have made. And now the way is open, and the journey has an end in sight at last. Be still an instant and go home with him, and be at peace a while.
There's so much packed in that last paragraph. It's just like he summed it up and said, okay, we got to stop talking about this. Let's unpack that just a little bit. This holy child with a capital C remains with you, a small y. You. His home is yours. Today, capital H, he gives you his defenselessness. And you, today, right, accept it in exchange for what? For all the toys of what? Battle. That you have made and hold and protect yourself with and dwell on and invest in so that you can be safe and healthy and wealthy and wise and sleep well, etc. in this world. Battle for good care of the body and all its interests. You have enough money for rent next month, right? A couple of months would be better. Right? Of course. You can't be happy if your rent's not paid. I mean, don't you know? Oh my God, and there are 1,000 others. The toys of battle. How about with your love relationship in your life? Are you sort of keeping up with responsibility in your love relationship? Or are you flagging behind a bit? Or are you getting ahead extra where you can so that when you do flag, she owes you? Oh, battle, battle, battle. Oh my God, right? So natural here. So natural here. But today, if you're doing this lesson, he gives you his defenselessness. And you accept it in exchange for all the toys of battle you have made. And now the way is open and the journey has an end in sight at last. Whoa. Be still an instant and go home with him and be at peace a while. Yeah. Powerful lesson. Ooh, but most of all, I just want you to recall that first paragraph. The world you seem to live in is not home to you. Somewhere in your mind, you know that this is true. Yes?
When you said love, and you said making sure that you're taking care of her, I'd like to share for myself after my divorce. Yeah. It was very important. The biggest lesson I learned was I wasn't taking care of myself through the marriage. And because I wasn't taking care of myself through the marriage, and finally at the end, I felt bitter and angry and resentful.
Yes.
That's something that I think that every human being should do, is make sure that they're taking care of themselves properly.
Hey.
Especially in relationships.
Especially in relationships. Yes. Where you can get drained out.
Right.
This book has a chapter 16 in this book talks about the special relationship. And it calls the ego out to the mat on this whole relationship thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, somewhere you got the idea that to prove your love, you should sacrifice. And that would prove your love. Not only to them, but to you too. Sounds like you know better.
You know, I've learned so much about that, and it's funny how we humans learn. We learn through our experiences, and hopefully we learn after we've made these mistakes and we don't make them again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've learned a huge amount from my divorce and how I was raising my kids and how I was interacting with my ex-wife. And, and you know, we're not bitter. We're happy that we saw that and grew up.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how we human beings learn, and it's okay to make mistakes and learn from them.
Whether it's okay or not, it's what it is.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Turn to page 412, and let's pick up with our reading. And we're going to read a subsection, so we're going to do yet more reading tonight. Where did we leave off?
Well,
412 in the text, back to the front of the book.
The second obstacle.
Yes.
Belief the body is valuable for what it offers. We said that peace must first surmount the obstacle of your desire to get rid of it. Where the attraction of guilt holds sway, peace is not wanted. The second obstacle that peace must flow across, and closely related to the first, is the belief that the body is valuable for what it offers. For here is the attraction of guilt made manifest in the body and seen in it.
This is the value that you think peace would rob you of. This is what you believe that it would dispossess, that peace would dispossess and leave you homeless. And it's this for which you would deny a home to peace. This seeming sacrifice you feel to be too great to make, too much to ask of you. Is it a sacrifice or a release? What has the body really given you that justifies your strange belief that in it lies salvation? Do you not see that this is the belief in death? Here's the focus of the perception of atonement as murder. Here is the source of the idea that love is fear.
The Holy Spirit's messengers are sent far beyond the body, calling the mind to join in Holy Communion and be at peace. Such is the message that God gave them for you. It is only the messengers of fear that see the body. Look for what can suffer. It is a sacrifice to be removed from what can suffer. The Holy Spirit does not demand you suffer. You sacrifice the hope of the body's pleasure. It has no hope.
Please read that sentence again just to see if we got it right.
The Holy Spirit does not demand you sacrifice the hope of your body's pleasure. It has no hope of pleasure. But neither can it bring you fear of pain. Pain is the only sacrifice the Holy Spirit asks, and that this he would remove.
Yes. Yeah, well.
Peace is extended from you only to the eternal, and it reaches out from the eternal in you. It flows across all else. The second obstacle is no more solid than the first, for you want neither to get rid of peace nor limit it. What are these obstacles that you would interpose between peace and its going forth, but barriers you place between your will and its accomplishment? You want communion, not the feast of fear. You want salvation, not the pain of guilt. You want your Father, not a little mound of clay, to be your home. In your holy relationship as your Father's Son, he has not lost communion with him, nor with himself. When you agreed to join your brother, you acknowledge this is so. This has no cost, but it has release from cost.
Did you notice that little slight in there? He called you a mound of clay. That's personal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't hear you, mound of clay. Your home is not in the clay. Let's continue.
You've paid very dearly for your illusions, and nothing you have paid for bought in peace. You are not glad that heaven cannot be sacrificed, and sacrifice cannot be asked of you. There is no obstacle that you can place before our union, for in your holy relationship I am there already. You will surmount all obstacles together. We will surmount all obstacles together, for we stand within the gates and not outside. How easily the gates are opened from within to let peace through to bless the tired world. Can it be difficult for us to walk past barriers together when you have joined the limitless? The end of guilt is in your hands to give. Would you stop now to look for guilt in your brother?
Let me be to you the symbol of the end of guilt and look upon your brother as you would look on me. Forgive me all the sins you think the Son of God committed. And in the light of your forgiveness, he will remember who he is and forget what never was. I ask for your forgiveness, for if you are guilty, so must I be. But if I surmounted guilt and overcame the world, you were with me. Would you see in me the symbol of guilt or the end of guilt, remembering that what I signify to you, you see within yourself? Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah, sure.
Because there's so many uncapitalized words, I lose track of who they're talking about.
Yes, indeed. That's why I re-recorded this whole book and slipped in the pronouns in the recording.
Okay.
There's so many pronouns. Because, you know, this was oral. You know, this, the author, the person who wrote this down, heard it. And, you know, with the presence and just wrote what she heard. And you bet. If you like, I can read it back. I'll read it through with the pronouns.
Can you read it with the... Yes, please.
Yeah. Let me be the symbol to you, okay? And me is Jesus, not capitalized.
Oh.
He's a dude here. Jesus is the idea of a human being that has surrendered the whole fixation of being a body. Mm-hmm. Representing bodies now, but with an awakened mind. Just like you, when you wake up, we're not going to capitalize you either.
Yeah.
Because you've woken up from an illusion, from having a body. And so all you are is right-minded. Wrong-minded is the ego. Right-minded is Jesus. Is the Holy Spirit, is right-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so let me, woken mind, be to you the symbol of the end of guilt and look upon your brother, and your brother you got, as you would look upon me. Forgive me all the sins that you think the Son of God committed. Okay, so forgive me, and me is the truth of who you are in your right mind.
Mm-hmm.
The truth of who Stephen is in his right mind.
Mm-hmm.
The truth of any SOB you might find as a problem in your life in their right mind is Jesus. That's Jesus, a symbol of right-mindedness. So, sentence two. So forgive me, the right-minded thinker, all the sins you think your brother, who I'm going to call Son of God with capital letters, because I see that SOB that did that, I see them with the right mind. I see through their fear. I see through their attacks.
Mm.
I see through what they deserve to be punished for. I see through that. I see the call for love. I see them looking for love as they steal money to get drugs,
mm-hmm.
and kill somebody in the process. I know what they're doing. This is how love sees things. And in the light of your forgiveness, he, your brother, kept small h now, because it's the mistaken identity of being a body, living and being in a body. He will remember who he is. He will go from wrong-minded, he will touch on right-mindedness because of your forgiveness, your releasing him from being a sinner in your mind. You're not alone in the effects of your thoughts. You're not alone in the effects of your seeing. It's contagious in the most important way. And forget what never was. And of course, when a true correction occurs, you forget the false version. If you learned that 2 plus 2 is 6, you can say it and can memorize it and write it down. But when you actually get into math class, 2 and 2 is always 4, of course. Never again will you say it's 6. It's gone. The correction is here. The miracle has occurred. The correction of perception about 2 and 2 has occurred. Same with your brother. When love alights in your heart, when the Christ vision occurs to you, and you see somebody doing something horrible in the world, you will instantly see, like 2 plus 2 is always 4, you will see the motivation for anything anybody does. And it is because they too want the same thing you want. They're going about it for the ugly way. But you see through it. Your forgiveness does that. It releases them in your mind. And it sounds like this. In the light of your forgiveness, he will remember who he is and forget what never was. I ask for your forgiveness. For if you are guilty, so must I be. Now, you have to be A Course in Miracles students to make any sense of that sentence. Well,
who's the I there then?
Yes, it's very good. I'll read it for you. I, Jesus.
I must be guilty too?
Oh, yes. Here's Jesus, your older brother, on this spiritual path, gone ahead of you, graduated ahead.
A little bit.
He's calling down, coming, slumming? He's coming on back around into the shadows where you hang out. And he's coming to give you a message. He says, look, says, I ask for your forgiveness. Okay, now, that's why I say you really need to be A Course in Miracles students to make any sense of this sentence. And the next four words show you. For if you are guilty. Get it? So, in this book, forgiveness is never something out there. Forgiveness is always of your own thinking. That's what needs to be released from guilt. That's where the work needs to be done. That's where your pain comes from. It's not from the world does. It does what it does. It's what you do with the world. The judgments and condemnations that you have taken and put on your own situation because of what you have judged. What you have judged and how it applies to you. And so we make a world laden with guilt. And if you perceive your guilt right, if you got your guilt on, really, really good guilt perception going, you'll come out okay, and he'll be the one that's got the problem, if you're really good at it. And so this is Jesus is no stranger to this, having walked in your shoes. He says, you know what? I need your forgiveness. I need you to forgive you, because it's one mind. Later he says, you got to forgive me. What you think I've done? I being one who is not guilty. I jump ahead. Okay, but I ask for your forgiveness, for if you are guilty, so must I be. You cannot give what you do not have. Is that fair? Even in the world of the ego, you can't give what you don't have. It's simple math. You got pizza? You can give pizza. You got peace? You can offer peace. If you're angry, you are not going to be offering peace today. That's why I say, before you go and visit a cancer patient, we should chat. Get you in the right space of mind. I'll give you a couple pages to read. So that you actually come in the room and have something to bring, rather than fear. It's this kind of thinking in this one little sentence, which is so Course in Miracles. I ask for your forgiveness, right? Your forgiveness is always to you, not anyplace else. I ask for your forgiveness, for if you are guilty, then so must I be. But if I surmounted guilt, if I, Jesus, surmounted guilt and overcame the world, you were there with me. Because there's one mind. And, turns out, there's no time either. I've transcended time and space in my awakening. And so I know you are there with me. Because you are. You are as much as I am. He knows. You can't see that because we're so drunk on time and space and bodies and the whole material thing. But he knows. Would you see in me, Jesus, the right-mindedness, your older brother, would you see in me the symbol of guilt or the end of guilt? He's saying, use me. He's saying, change your mind about me. Let me be your older brother who loves you, coming back for you, easily walking in the shadows now with you. Would you see this in the middle of the end of guilt? Remembering that what I signify to you that you see in yourself. In other words, this idea of a part of your mind that is healed, we call it Jesus for convenience. Works really well if you play along. But there is part of your mind that is actually woken. If you will give that mind existence, if you give that mind actual freedom, then you're free too, because you are connected to it thereby. And willfully and wantingly, you want Jesus to be your hero. You want Jesus to be your hero. But don't worry, if you keep working with the book, it won't be some hero someplace else. That's some other program. Course in Miracles always connects it to you. That's his job with this whole book. Is unity, oneness, healing of the only thing that can be sick. Hope that explains it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, let's continue.
From your holy relationship, truth proclaims the truth, and love looks on itself. Salvation flows from deep within the home you offer to my Father and to me. And we are there together in the quiet communion in which the Father and the Son are joined. O come ye faithful to the holy union of the Father and the Son in you, and keep you not apart from what is offered you in gratitude for giving peace its home in heaven. Send forth to all the world the joyous message of the end of guilt, and all the world will answer. Think of your happiness as everyone offers you witness of the end of sin and shows you that its power is gone forever. Where can guilt be when the belief in sin is gone? And where is death when the great advocate is heard no more?
And then just for our new guy, anybody here, can you? What is sin in the Course in Miracles?
Separation.
Did you say new guy?
Mm-hmm. Louis.
Louis,
yeah. Sin is just the idea of separation. It's the idea of separate parts. No, we're connected. But then if you've got separate parts, now you've got one thing that can attack another and benefit from it, and then one of them's guilty. It's math. World math. Duality math. Fantasy math, turns out. But then when you play with it long enough, you build the whole world around it. That's how you survive here. Try to compete fairly, but you better compete or you'll be last. And so is the world. And so the world works. But it has to block love in order to play that game, see, with those rules. You can't have love. That's really inconvenient. And at the wrong time, if you're peaceful, that ain't going to work for you. Because when it comes, sometimes you need to attack to get your way, right? To get, you know, fairness, you got to attack. And if you're peaceful, it really makes you a bad attacker. You suck at it. You'll be last. So you got to block peace. You need some obstacles to peace. To play this game here in this world, you do. That's what we're talking about in this whole section. Oh, okay.
The only thing I wanted to say about that one is...
Yes.
When you're playing the game...
Yes.
It doesn't feel very good.
Yeah. Well, not if you're in peace and love. No, it's not going to feel good. That's what I'm going through. No, it doesn't feel good. So then you have to go, okay, I've got to play defense. Because you got to protect yourself.
Uh-huh.
Or you got to leave. So that's what I'm working on as we. That's my thing.
Yeah,
I'm learning that
slippery slope.
Yes,
slippery slope. Playing in this game,
I like to be peaceful and loving and a good person and everything. I don't want to block all the good stuff.
Yeah.
So how can I be a good person and love and help and be a good community member and not be part of this hateful game?
Yeah.
But still make a decent living and be out there in the business world and.
And so, love yourself
still,
as best you know how.
Right, right.
How can you do that?
I'm going through that. That's one of the things. That's why I'm here.
Welcome, Course
in Miracles. You know, I think the problem with all that is thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't think and you just feel, if you feel bad about what you're doing, then you know you're not in the right place.
Okay, let's go back to 4:12.
That's how I do it. I go inside and say, how does this feel?
See, the problem with even feeling for a little bit of guidance, the feelings are informed by the ego. Mm-hmm. He says, well, what do I really feel about this? And without a little bit of guidance, the ego will eventually come around and will tell you how to feel.
Yeah, but it never tells you to feel good.
Sometimes it does.
Sometimes... It tells you how to feel good, doesn't it, Kim?
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out to be not a good path to take. Mm-hmm. You can't get to feeling good with the ego all the time. I mean, has anybody else been through this? You actually had some good days, or some good drugs, or some good abuse, or some good whatever. A binge of some sort, just taking a day off of work. Is that what you did? Okay, great. Felt good? Yeah, finally I had some time to myself.
Well, it is like drugs. You know, you get high and then you crash and then you get high again and then you crash. And
did you volunteer some time? Did you take work off to go do charity work and you felt really great? When you got to work, you crashed? Is that what happened? Yeah, but in the meantime, I really gave some good time to the homeless people.
And how good am I because I did that?
Oh, that was lice. That's the worst thing that happened to me. Is I got some other head like that. I'll be over it in a few days. But poor me. Right? Oh. Right? You bet. It's just like a drug. And so many examples of high-reaching, big-hearted people. Like Mother Teresa. They went through some really difficult drug cycles. Being good. Charitable. And then a little dishonest along the way. Turns out, even so well-minded, you end up trapped in the world. The slippery slope, my friend. Trying to be so good. On the world's terms. Slippery slope. Yeah. Now, I appreciate the guidance of the Course in Miracles because, see, the second part of this book is lessons. One for each day of the year. And you go through this and catch your ego trying to be a really good body. Yeah.
For me, what the where I'm stuck is it's not bad to have nice things. I've learned that. Most religions want to make you feel like, oh well, if you have drive a $80,000 car, you've got too much money, or you know, all that. It's no, money can be a tool, but as long as I can make that money and still be the wonderful person that I want to be, and not be hurting people and raping and pillaging to get that money to have those nice things, and as long as those nice things aren't my God.
Uh-huh.
So that's...
Can you bring little love to the world?
What?
Can you bring a little love to the world?
Yes.
With or without an $80,000 car?
Yes.
Is the bottom line the love to the world?
Yes.
The love to your life?
Of course.
And then it shines like a light in the darkness no matter where you go?
And that's where I'm at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we're on the same page.
Yeah.
All right. Look at page 4:12. We'll go back and start working our way through.
We're not going to do number 8.
Oh, did we miss one?
I thought we did.
Oh, that's one.
Okay, who's up? Bring it.
Forgive me your illusions and release me from punishment for what I have not done. So will you learn the freedom that I taught by teaching freedom to your brother.
Oh, yeah.
And so releasing me. I am within your body I am within your holy relationship. That you would imprison me behind the obstacles you raised to freedom and bar my way to you. Yet it is not possible to keep away one who is there already. And in him, it is possible that our communion, where we are joined already, will be the focus of the new perception that will bring light to all the world contained in you.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's going to be so fun to do that paragraph when we get there. Okay, back to 412. Okay, so remember what we're talking about. This whole section is called the Obstacles to Peace. Okay, and so he gives us a little rehearsal of the previous subsections. Okay, we said that peace must first surmount the obstacle of your desire to get rid of peace. Isn't that funny? But as we described, it's really practical in this world sometimes to not be peaceful. Don't be a doormat. Get up and get in their face. Make them know how mad you are, and then they'll respect you. So says the world. So says the ego. Couldn't possibly be that love is stronger than hate. Show some hate and you'll get your way. That's what the world says. Korsha introduced to you the power of sharing and of joining. Even as you have to make changes in the world to keep your body alive. Yeah. Or to communicate successfully. Might you communicate better with joining than opposing? Yes. Okay. Where the attraction of guilt holds sway, peace is not wanted. Because guilt's attractive when it's used like a coin. And it says...
Where are you reading?
Oh, I'm reading on paragraph 1, on page 412.
Okay.
And now I'm on sentence 2.
Okay, thank you.
Where the attraction of guilt holds sway, peace is not wanted. Because the ego will use guilt like a coin. And it will say, it'll kind of reverse of money though. It says, I don't have the guilt, you have the guilt. And that's good for me. The more guilty you are, the more innocent I am, I'm working my way up. And you're going to ask me for forgiveness, aren't you? Oh, payday. Please forgive me, Andrew. I shouldn't have taken your parking space. After you put your name on it and everything, I was just in a hurry. You don't mind, do you? Will you forgive me? I'm sorry. Well, maybe, Pam. You know, after all, like, I earned that parking space, but...
I would never do such a thing.
I wouldn't do it to you. I wouldn't take your parking space. But you know what? I like you.
You must be better than me.
Well, you hurt me, but I'm not going to punish you. I mean, you are guilty. Can we agree on this? You're guilty. It's your car in my parking space, right? So, what do you say?
So sorry.
Are you sorry? Okay.
I'm so bad.
Is that a tear? I think that's what...
My ears are down.
All right, there we go. Well, I forgive you.
Oh, thank God.
You dirty, rotten, cheap parking space stealer that you are. But I forgive you. I'm loving. You took something from me and you hurt me. And you stole. But I'm loving. How loving is that? That's an attack. I am beating her between every nice word. Yeah. I am pounding her with guilt. So I'm using the guilt coin. Guilt holds sway so that I can get a little pumped up. Good. Got you. You owe me. Master of my world. Slippery slope, that is. Very expensive. Not love going on between us. Very expensive interaction. Whew. Yeah, stop that. Okay? The second obstacle that peace must flow across, and closely related to the first, is the belief that the body is valuable for what the body offers. Even treasure needed. That the body offers this home we talked about. How else would you interrelate with people? How else would you satisfy that hunger? How would you get from place to place? how would you be tooling around Santa Cruz in that cool white roadster that you drive without your body? What does it offer? Addiction, baby. Okay? For here, with this whole body thing, is the attraction of guilt made manifest in the body and seen in the body. Remember, we dug into guilt all those weeks. Remember, the big burden of our discussion is that guilt needs one thing acting on, wait for it, another thing. That's how guilt survives, works. And that you've already drank in the potion. And you already got the one thing can act and do to another thing. All that's just a priori acceptance. Slippery slope. It's like being completely addicted and not even knowing you're addicted. When separation is real. That's what's required for guilt. What if it wasn't so? Can a knife cut itself? What of oneness? What of this oneness thing? What do you get with it? All right. Well, let's look just a little further into what A Course in Miracles says you use the body for. Turn into the back of the book, workbook, page 425.
425?
425. In the back. Check out this action.
Is this a lesson?
It's not a lesson. It is a... it's right after lesson 260. And it's an instruction. The course has, when you get into part 2 of the workbook, has 14 instructions that prepare your mind for the following 10 lessons. And so this one is what is the body. And in the following 10 lessons, you'll have this reading in mind as you do each of the lessons. Organized teacher, this material. What a teacher. Amazing. Who's up?
You.
Okay. What is the body? The body is a fence the Son of God imagines he has built to separate parts of his true self from other parts. It's within this fence that he thinks he lives to die as it decays and crumbles. For within this fence he thinks that he is safe from love. Identifying with his safety, he regards himself as what his safety is. How else could he be certain he remains within the body, keeping love outside?
The body will not stay, yet this he sees as double safety. For the Son of God is impermanence, is proof. His fences work and do the task his mind assigns to him. For if his oneness still remained untouched, he would attack, and who could be attacked? Who could be victor? Who could be his prey? Who could be victim? Who is murderer? If he did not die, what proof is there that God's eternal Son can be destroyed?
The body is a dream. Like other dreams, it sometimes seems to picture happiness, but can quite suddenly revert to fear where every dream is born. For only love creates in truth, and truth can never fear. Made to be fearful, must the body serve the purpose given it? But we can change the purpose that the body will obey by changing what we think that it is for.
The body is the means by which God's Son returns to sanity. though it was meant to fence him into hell without escape, yet has the goal of heaven been exchanged for the pursuit of hell. The Son of God extends his hand to reach his brother and to help him walk along the road with him. Now is the body holy. Now it serves to heal the mind that it was made to kill.
Which I love, because that's what you talked about your body is for, extending its hand to another, essentially. You relate to other people.
You will identify with what you think you make. Well, you will identify with what you think will make you safe. Whatever it may be, you will believe that it is one with you. Your safety lies in truth and not in lies. Love is your safety. Fear does not exist. Identify with love and you are safe. Identify with love and you are home. Identify with love and find your true self.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at paragraph one a little bit, because it's loaded with some fighting words. The body is a fence the Son of God imagines that he has built to separate parts of his self, his true self now, from other parts of his true self. It's within this fence he thinks he lives. To die as it decays and crumbles. For within this fence he thinks that he is safe, he thinks he's safe from love. Would have to be. So let's look at this sentence. Within this fence, which is the body, he thinks he's safe from love. Thinks. And it works, actually, really well. If you identify with your body, you have your own space. It ends right at the edge of your skin in poor countries, and it ends at the edge of your manicured lawn in rich countries. But your body is a way for you to have your own separate space from others. In other words, it's the perfect way to be alone. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect way to not be joined. It works really well. I mean, you really struggle to keep the blood on the inside of the barrier, the skin. You keep the blood on the inside. That's yours too, isn't it? You drink the water and you eat the food and it fills up, there becomes our blood. It's yours as long as you need it. That's the rules, right? Keep your space and keep the outside closed. You can't bleed out. It's not happy making. It's a perfect way for you to be alone and really protect your kingdom, small k, is to have a body and be in it. And limited by it. Welcome to the world. Welcome to the addiction. Separation. If you were not protected from love, this barrier, see, with love, this barrier is meaningless. Isn't love the idea of ultimate sharing? A real sharing, you know what I mean? Isn't that love? Not give to get. Give to give. Give to share. Someone else's needs are the same or even higher than your own. That's the feeling. That's love. When you're moved for another, by another, for another, as another, are you acting? This is the amazing experience of love. And you get out of yourself for the other. Isn't that love? But that blows the rules on protecting your goods.
Kind of.
Your material goods. It grows your spiritual reality. It grows your awareness of God and love, for sure. But it blows the protection of your resources at the level of the world. Spend time for somebody else, and energy for somebody else. If you're in a selfish mood, you don't do it.
As long as you can stay in that state of mind where you're trying to help other people,
then
as soon as self creeps back in, you are your body again, and your body has just now betrayed you.
That's it.
Now you're alone.
Penniless.
You can't stand being alone anymore.
Yep, out of time.
When you're in that state of giving, alone is not even a factor. It's not even an issue.
Yeah.
And you don't have to like to be alone. That's illusion anyway.
Yes. And when you use the body to join in this loving space, as Walt said, and several people said, it's the perfect way to meet somebody else where they are. Mm-hmm. You have eyes, they have eyes. Mm-hmm. You have skin and bones and hunger, and they have skin and bones and hunger. Mm-hmm. They've been divorced, you've been divorced. Who better to talk to somebody who's been divorced? It really works out great. And to hold that light is now the most loving thing you could do for that and with that person. There's several places in the book where it talks about this. Mm-hmm. You know, the light you bring, and I am the light of the world, and light in the dream.
But see, that's what I'm saying. We've all probably, I imagine we've all many times or a few times experienced the feeling of oneness mm-hmm. through love. Mm-hmm. But when we're not experiencing that, we're into our body or our defense systems or whatever you want to call it, that doesn't feel good, because then you're not feeling love. Uh-huh. That's what I mean by, if I'm not feeling love, then I know I'm not doing the right thing.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
And that's what I meant when I said, I know when I'm feeling one by feeling love.
Yes.
And my body tells me, well, I'm not, because I'm not feeling very, very good.
Uh-huh.
My brain doesn't do it.
And it gets really inconvenient when your brain is in charge.
To say the least.
And when the body has needs, and is speaking really loudly with its sciatica, or whatever it's going on, or its hunger, or its tiredness, or it's irritable because you didn't get sleep last night watching that little kid. Who was trying to get sleep here and there.
But see, as Louis said, in a way, you have to, not in a way, you have to love yourself in order to love everybody else.
Oh my gosh.
So therefore, if you're loving yourself, you are loving everybody else.
Then you're available for love. You can't give what you don't have.
That's right. And you can also feel when that's not happening, too.
How do you... just to jump ahead a little bit, because we're running out of time. It's right on your point. How do you get love, according to A Course in Miracles, Kim?
I give it.
You give it! Oh! You mean... if I really want to get it, I give it?
What you give, you receive.
As you give, you receive. It's the law... of God, the law of love, the law of mind, the law of spirit.
I just got the unconditional love that a parent has for their child is a love that's, that unless you have a child, you'll never know. That's like true love. That's like love. That's, and I just figured out for myself that, thank you, that I have to love my child like self, like I love my children.
Yeah.
Unconditionally.
Yeah.
No.
I said before, if I would only talk to myself and and heal myself in the same way that I talk to my children and heal them, and never judge, never is a strong word, because I know I've judged my children, but for the most part, I don't judge my children, and I love them unconditionally, and I see them as perfectly pure no matter what they do. I don't see myself the same way.
Well, see, that's exactly, that's what I just got through this. Thank you, all of you, because that's a big deal to me. I've got to love my childlike self unconditionally, like I loved my children when they were small. When they were large, they were pains in the ass. Lots of times.
Yeah.
But when they were small, I loved them unconditionally because they were innocent and they weren't doing malicious stuff, you know?
But you know, the child of them is still innocent.
I get that. But I'm right now bringing all this because we're ending and I just got this great big piece of my puzzle.
Yes.
Did you guys help me get there? Thank you, because that's what I've got to start. That's, wow.
And thanks for bringing it back to us and speaking it out loud.
Wow.
So it turns out there's a child in you who's been waiting to grow up under love. Waiting. The adult in you took on responsibilities way beyond its age. And the ego was right there to show it how. And the ego was born, the ego grew, and the ego got wise in the way of the world. Meanwhile, that child of love that you really are is waiting as an infant to be raised. Mm-hmm. It's the child of love. The thing that grew up and became the adult in this world is what we call ego. Mm-hmm. It is the blocked of love existence that's really wise in the way of the world with guilt and fear and anger. And that's good for parenting. Turns out, if you read the books, one way to handle that all is set limits and keep to them and punish lovingly. Yeah. Oh my God. But it's quick. Mm-hmm. And it's much cheaper than using love to teach. Mm-hmm. But that love that's in you that would have easily, naturally taught has not had a parent to raise it. The only one is you, indeed. Mm-hmm. And there's part of your mind that's fully accessible that is a pure extension of love itself that would talk you through and raise that child that is you. And then what do you have to give to your kids? What is this love that can speak through the adult body were it only raised enough to access it? What is, how powerful is this love? How giving is this love that is truly you, was substituted by the ego responsible parent for all those years? What is this now, child of love in you, that would speak? Well, it's love itself. It is you extending God now, bringing light into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Children don't know anything but love. And until they're taught otherwise, until that point, they don't need forgiveness. They don't need anything. They twirl around and they wonder about everything and they, you know, and they're constantly learning and happy to be learning and have no judgments because they haven't learned how to judge yet.
Yeah.
You know.
And that child is still in you.
And isn't that sort of reverse that pattern is what we're doing with Course in Miracles? Mm-hmm. Learning not to judge? We're so accustomed to it, we're gonna learn to twirl again.
My first gift to my two youngest granddaughters was a big twirly skirt. It took me forever to get out of it. But I'm not a seamstress. I spent hours twirling.
All right. I just want to touch a few more sentences before we close the meeting on this page. Just highlights from this page for you. The next paragraph begins with, you know, the body will not stay. Period. Wait, does that mean there's something else that will? Or is that... What is it saying? Yet, this... your separated mind, your ego mind, sees as, you know, great news, double safety that the body will die. If you're identifying with your body, for the Son of God's seeming impermanence with the body dying, that's proof that the body works to keep this love thing away. Remember, love is the dissolving of differences.
and your body was hired to be different, so that you could be alone and work that way. You could work it, just play that way. But the problem is, of course, love got cut out. But it has to be cut out. Otherwise, the differences would disappear and we'd be sharing all the time. Joining, sharing, swimming together. Who said swimming? Totally fluid. Yeah. No, not in this world. No. Separateness. Yeah. Okay. Paragraph 3. The body is a dream. Talk about fluid. You know, how fluid your thoughts are in a dream? Like other dreams, it sometimes seems to picture happiness, but can quite suddenly revert to fear, where every dream is born. We'll get into that later when we talk about dreams more. For only love creates in truth, and truth can never fear. But the body, made to be fearful, must serve the purpose given it. Guilt, fear, different separation, battle. But we can change the purpose that the body will obey by changing what we think that it is for. So A Course in Miracles will now use the body that you made to be separate and safe from love as a tool to go back into the state of love and make that your first priority. So, let's have a circle. We have used our bodies to reach both directions at the same time. Clever of you. Grab some other bodies for a moment. And in service is your body. Call it to breathe a deep breath. So, you've got a choice going forward from this night. What's in charge? Your body or you? You can use your body to forward this idea of love, of peace, of joining, of usefulness, of bringing light, more light where there's light, and some light where there's dark at least. You can do this with your body. You can do this. Because it will always, your body, will always follow your mind. Your body is a servant. Let it never be a master to you. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank
you. Good
so
job.
Much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. I'm
it's
telling
you.
Excited. You know what I'm going to wish for you? I'm going to wish that you
made it. Wow.